Hello and welcome to F1 Explains. It's the official Formula One podcast where you send in your questions about the sport and we find the best people to answer them. I'm Christian Hugill, and alongside me, literally alongside me, not separated by the Atlantic Ocean for a change, is Katie Osborne. Hello, Katie.
Hi. I'm just so excited to be at a circuit with you, first and foremost, because you've done so much of the F1 traveling this year. So thank you for representing.
You're welcome. It's been literally my pleasure, but you're here in the US with me.
I'm glad to be here with you. And also for everyone listening, since you can't see Christian right here, right now, like I get to across the table from me, is sporting a new hat. And this hat has been a big talking point over the course of the last, let's call it, 12 hours.
Well, it is the circuit of the Americas. It is the US Grand Prix weekend. And I think that my new hat might be the biggest talking point of the paddock. I think it might be. It's a proper cowboy hat bought from Austin, Texas. I love it here, Katie. I love this weekend. And I was like, I'm going to throw myself into this. I want to look like a cowboy. It's as close as a British guy from the Midlands will ever get to feeling like a cowboy, and I love it.
So yeah, he's representing it very, very well. So as we've been talking about, we're at the Circuit of Americas, Austin, Texas, for the U.S. Grand Prix. It is so great to be here, and this is the race weekend that we actually see the return of Liam Lawson to Formula One. Can you believe it? Did you believe it?
I can believe it, yes. Okay. I mean, we all saw it coming, didn't we? Let's be honest. He did five races in 2023. Now he's taking over at VCARB for the rest of the season. So for the first time in a while, he's got a race to prepare for, Katie.
How about that? And we've had questions from you, the F1 Explains listeners. F1 Explainers, as I'd like to say, but Christian has vetoed. About.
I don't mind F1 Explainers. I don't mind it.
Okay, I like it.
The Anyways, nickname gave me the ick at first, but it's okay.
About an F1 driver's pre-race routine. And we decided to ask none other than Liam Lawson himself. Now, Christian and I need to point out that when we did record this, we did not know that Liam was going to be returning to F1. We may have had a suspicion.
Yeah, we all had a slight inkling that at some point he would, but it wasn't confirmed, was it?
No, and we did not realize it would happen on the same weekend that we're talking about his pre-race routine. So lucky it worked out that way.
We've got lucky. Anybody would think this podcast is just thrown together, but it's not. There's planning, although we have had a bit of luck here. So yeah, we've now got this great insight into what Liam will be doing before he gets back into the car here at COTA this weekend.
This is what happened when we asked Liam Lawson about his pre-race routine.
We're recording this week's episode in front of a lovely live audience at the F1 Paddock Club. Hello, everybody. That was very nice. I'm impressed. Thank you, everyone. And we have a very special guest making his second appearance on F1 Explains. Please give a very warm round of applause to Mr. Liam Lawson. Liam, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
It is our pleasure to have you back. Welcome to Paddock Club. Just before you came, Liam, on this table, there was some incredibly good-looking lobster. They really do look after people up here.
Why did they take it away?
I don't know, but part of me did wonder if they hadn't. I'm not sure I'd have known how to eat it. Do you know how to deconstruct a lobster?
I think you use scissors and you'd like...
Yeah, those little scissors things.
And you take them apart, yeah.
We might need to do an episode, F1 Explains How to Eat a Lobster, for future reference. And Liam, I've just mentioned you joined us earlier in the season to answer some questions for us. We recorded your interview in Canada, I believe. And F1 Explains listener Ben emailed us straight after that episode dropped to say, Liam, I'm a huge fan of your work. Keep up what you do best. I am your number one fan. That is from Ben. Liam, would you like to say anything to Ben?
I would like to say thank you very much.
There you go. Ben, we've passed on your message. Now, our listeners decide what we talk about in each episode. And this time, we're answering questions that have come in to F1 Explains at F1.com from Andy and Jess in the UK and also Kathy in California. Now, they all emailed to ask about Formula One drivers' pre-race routine and what they do before getting in the car. So we're going to focus this week on explaining a pre-race routine, Liam. You did five races in the 2024 season. The first one was here, wasn't it, if I remember correctly?
At
the Dutch Grand Prix, where we're recording this week's episode. And that was obviously a surprise for you because you jumped in last minute when Daniel was injured. So let's talk about a typical race day first. Let's say the race starts at like 3 o'clock local time, like it does here in the Netherlands. What time do you wake up? What's the very start of an F1 race day for an F1 driver?
So the Formula One weekends, especially compared to every other championship that I raced in, the biggest difference was how everything is basically dragged out. It's a much longer day. So on a normal race weekend outside of F1, if we're in another championship like F2 or F3 or something like that, you'll do your preparations and then you'll spend time sort of getting yourself in the zone, however you like to do that, and then you race. But in F1, the Sunday feels like a really long day. This whole build up, you have the I'm having a mind blank. The driver's parade. Thank you so much.
Thank you to the gentleman at the front row helping Liam there.
No, I appreciate that.
Fantastic, sir. Thank you. You can get a credit on the episode. Well done.
Driver's parade. And it feels like a long day. We do 3 or 4 briefings. We have lots of meetings with the team. And then you finally have sort of an hour to yourself where you basically do your warm up with your trainers. Everybody has their own thing. For me, I listen to music, so I listen to a lot of music before I get in the car.
I'm going to interrupt you because that immediately interests me. What music does Liam Lawson like? I'm really intrigued.
It changes a lot. So I grew up with music. I play music as well.
So genre-wise, vaguely, we're talking pop, rock, rap. What do we like?
Rap, mostly rap before a race because it's probably the thing that's... helps get you sort of in the zone, but I listen to rock music as well. I grew up listening to that because of my dad. Lots of different music. Country recently, I have an American girlfriend, so I listen to a lot of country music.
Country
which is something
music's
that's
a
new
bit of
to
a
me.
Resurgence at the moment as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
I feel like it is. Yeah, I never really listened to it growing up, and then in the last 2 years I have. And then you get in the car, which they'll do not long after this, and basically you do your sort of 4 installation laps, you park on the grid, and then you get back out of the car again. And then there's another build-up. You have the national anthem, and then even more time spent. So trying to stay locked in is actually quite difficult before an F1 race.
To take it back to the very start, what sort of breakfast do you have? Because I'm guessing fueling yourself, the cars have to be fueled, but you guys have to be fueled as well.
So it depends. Probably the coolest part for me coming into Formula One, or one of the coolest things, was that I didn't realize before, but when you're an F1 driver, at least in Red Bull, we have like nutritionists and people who basically build your race weekend meal plan, and it's filled with all the optimum things that you want to eat, basically. So everything we eat on a race weekend is being carefully sort of picked out, the right amount of protein, the right amount of carbs, things like that. So for me, I like scrambled eggs. So I normally have an omelette or scrambled eggs,
I love
or something
a scrambled
like that.
Egg.
Yep. And I love avocado. So I have a lot of avocado.
We've got similar food tastes. I love a bit of avocado as well. They've got some avocado upstairs on the second floor, I noticed, here at Paddock Club. It looks
just
excellent.
Just by itself, or what is it?
No, it was part of a little bar-y thing with lots of different...
It would be weird if it was just by itself.
The avocado bar, brought to you by Liam Lawson.
Yeah, I would have one of those.
Yeah. And then what time do you typically get to the track? Are you here for hours and hours before the race?
I'd say 9 a.m. is an average, 9, 9:30, something like that.
It's earlier than a lot of people expect, you know.
It varies, and it varies each weekend. I only did 5 races, so but it depends on what time the race is and what time the first meeting is. And then if you're struggling on a weekend, for example, and you think you need more time to go through stuff, you'll arrive earlier to allow yourself more time. It's completely variable. It depends on what you and your engineer decide is a good time.
And also, reserve drivers have a quite, well, different thing as well, don't they? Because you guys need to be ready to jump in the car at any given moment across a race weekend, particularly on a Thursday or a Friday, as you found out last year. Can that be difficult to, I wouldn't say relax, because you guys are here to do a job anyway, but can that be a difficult thing to sort of have in the back of your mind when you're on reserve driver duties? Like, well, I could be called in at any moment.
At the start, it is. It feels like that. When I first became a reserve driver, I was going to each race weekend and feeling like there's a, you know, I could be driving. And then over time, you realize that obviously the likelihood is very, very low. And even for me, because I'm technically a reserve for both teams, I have an even higher chance. But it's still so low that eventually you start to almost accept that it's, because it's such a low chance, But obviously, you still need to maintain being ready, and that's something we do, the preparations before the weekends, that all stays the same. I think it's more of a mental thing that you just sort of accept that it's a low chance, but then it can happen. And so when it does, it's a very big shock.
And it does happen. There's a story of Nico Hülkenberg, who's now back racing in Formula One full time, but he had a few years on the sidelines. And I remember him talking about the fact he was having a very relaxed coffee, and then he got a phone call to say, right, you're in. And amazing how quickly your relaxed coffee with a little pastry on the side can all of a sudden turn into something quite different.
It's exactly right. For me, I was standing in the Red Bull garage and I was watching FP2 last year, and I saw the crash and I didn't think anything of it.
No, it looked quite innocuous, Daniel's crash that injured him, didn't it?
It didn't look like it was something that, yeah, it wasn't a really huge big impact or anything like that. It was just a really unlucky situation, the way the steering wheel moves. So I didn't think anything of it, and it wasn't until I got a text probably 20 minutes later from AlphaTauri at the time, and they said, we need you at the back of the garage immediately after the session.
Yeah, hello.
And then I was like, okay, hang on a second. And so I started thinking about it, and I knew straight away what it was about. And then your mind just goes into spirals.
There must be a moment of excitement, but do any nerves kick in at that point as well?
I think depending on other tracks would it be more excitement. This place is so demanding. It's such a tricky track. Definitely not one that I would have picked to debut a race in.
Thrown in at the deep end.
It's honestly a crazy track to drive, especially in Formula One. It's probably the highest commitment or one of the highest commitment tracks. Lots of blind sections where you're turning in, basically not even seeing the corner. Turn seven here, it's in the old car it was flat, and this car it's close to flat. And you can't even see where the corner is. The track just drops away and you're just committing. So it's so easy to drop a wheel anywhere. What happened to Logan yesterday, dropped a wheel in the grass and it just sends you straight into the wall. So, yeah, there's other tracks I would have probably chosen.
But you did fantastically well. And we're obviously talking on this week's F1 Explains about preparation and how drivers prepare for a race. So to go back to that, Liam, to go back to some of our listeners' questions, we've had quite a few ask about... We've done breakfast, now lunch on a race day. And how long before the race do you eat? Because there must be a bit of a balance. You don't want to go... We've all had that thing after a big meal, haven't we? Where you don't want to do anything and you want to sit here. You don't want to feel like that. But I'm imagining you also don't want to go into a race starving hungry.
Yeah, they are timed, I guess, perfectly as the team would plan it. A couple of hours before the race, probably around now, before they do the driver's parade, they would have probably already had... Yeah, they would have had lunch by now.
And we're recording this a couple of hours before the race starts, so yeah. And is there any sort of physical warm-up before the race? People often underestimate how physically demanding driving a Formula One car is. It's something that, you know, random person on the street wouldn't be able to do. You guys are superhuman. Does that require a physical warm-up before the race or something to test your reaction times?
Yeah, we do a lot of warm-up, to be honest. There's at least probably 30 minutes that's set aside for warm-up. Again, in Formula One, it's much more detailed than anything else that I've done. It's warming up like before a gym session. If you're going to the gym, it's warming up, stretching, lots of band work, and then it's reaction time stuff, because in Formula One, obviously, your reactions have to be very, very fast. So we do a lot. Every driver has different things. I used reaction lights, like light panels, and then neck warm up. Probably the main thing you need to really make sure is ready to go, especially on this track, is your neck, just because of how high speed a lot of the corners are. It's a lot of G load on your neck, and if you don't warm up, it's something that can be really quite taxing. Like in the race, if you start to lose your neck, it's really painful and it gets to a point where you just can't hold it up anymore.
It's taking nothing to chance, isn't it? I mean, that's something that always amazes me in F1. Every minor detail being looked at. It's really interesting to hear you say there, if the warm-up doesn't go right, your physical warm-up, not the car being warmed up, the driver being warmed up, that's something that can impact the race. Yeah. There's so many little variables that can have a big impact on a Sunday afternoon and your whole weekend. And it's obviously a team sport. It's not just your weekend. It's the hundreds of people working at the team's weekend. It's amazing.
Yep, yeah, exactly right. So I think that's probably the biggest difference from Formula One to everything else is the detail, the amount of people that are, I mean, there's thousands of staff, you know, in Red Bull Racing, for example, that are working as hard as they can to make two cars go as fast as possible. So the detail is quite impressive.
You just mentioned the other races, and one of the things I love as a fan about being at Formula One events is the fact that you can watch Formula 3, Formula 2, F1 Academy. Does a driver watch that or keep an eye on that when they're racing in F1? Or is that something you've simply not got the time to do?
We definitely do. I think quite often, especially in mixed conditions and things like that, we can learn quite a few things from watching F2, for example. What happens in pit stops, things like that. The pit lane could be slippery, for example, and you don't really know about it, but then you watch the F2 race and you see that they struggle with something, or the different lines that drivers are using, you see that maybe there's good grip in places that you didn't know, certain curbs that drivers are using. There's lots of things that we can learn from F2 races, for example, that we would then look at for our race.
Welcome back to F1 Explains. This week we are looking at drivers' pre-race routines with Liam Lawson. But before we get back to Liam, a reminder that we want to hear from you on F1 Explains if you're going to be at the US Grand Prix in Austin, Texas. Myself and Katie Osborne and producer Chris are going to be at the amphitheatre stage on Saturday evening after qualifying for an F1 Explains live show. And we would love for you to come and see us. If you have a ticket for the weekend, you can come and watch at no extra cost. Let us know if you're going to be there. Email f1explains@f1.com and we might be able to make you part of the show, and we'd love to meet you afterwards as well. So that is F1 Explains Live at the US Grand Prix in Austin, Texas. But let's get back to our chat with Mr. Liam Lawson. Now, something that fascinated me, and this might just be me, I'm a very sad man, Liam. I love F1 and find lots of things of it interesting that maybe aren't interesting, but I really liked the fact that they have the drivers have the little cubby holes almost, like the little sort of rooms that are just your own space, often at the back of the team motorhomes. I've seen a couple of them. I've seen them in McLaren and Alpine. I don't think I've seen a Red Bull one, but A, presumably you have that little space somewhere that's like a little room. And people think F1's always grand, but it doesn't tend to be a great big massive room, does it? Do you have those at Red Bull, the little rooms that you can just base yourself?
Yeah, they do. And that's something that I didn't really know about until I drove and I got my own little room, and it was pretty cool. I put one of those like misters that smell really nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's something I did after the first couple of races. You make it your own little space. Have a speaker in there, play music. It's really cool.
I can't remember which driver it was, so I'm going to say which of the two because I don't want to misquote them. It was one of Pierre Gasly or Esteban Ocon. I know this because I was in Alpine. And they'd got a couple of little cute fan messages that a fan had given them in the paddock that they'd pinned to the wall of their room. It's a nice thing that give yourself a little space to just have a bit of zen, be yourself. I think that's a really nice little thing.
It's cool. I mean, everybody does different things. I think Checo has his family up on his wall, which is quite cool. That space is that's yours, basically. It's also good because we quite often have a lot of really intense meetings, a lot of conversations, and sometimes when you need to have space to yourself and time away, it's nice that you can just go to that room and basically have that.
Is that where you'll get suited up and helmeted up before a race?
It's where you get suited up, where you put all the gear on. It's where we warm up normally as well. We warm up in that room and then you basically go to the garage.
I'm interested, are you a soccer or football fan?
Not as I'm from New Zealand, so rugby fan.
Of course. Right, stay with me because the point stands. If you're in rugby or you're in soccer or football, you often hear like that balance between getting yourself revved up, but you don't want to get yourself too revved up or you'll go and injure one of the opponents, or you'll go and get yourself sent off, or something bad will happen. Is there that balance with Formula One between you've got these spaces where you want to stay calm before a race, but I guess you also want to be hyped up a bit and buzzing and ready to go? Is there a balance to be had there?
There's definitely a balance. There's basically, obviously, you're just trying to be as focused as possible, and when you're driving, to be honest, all you're trying to do is do as much of it subconsciously as possible, because when we're driving, to be honest, most of what we're doing, you know, steering, pushing pedals, gear changes, all the switch changes, they're all subconscious. I'm not really actively thinking about it. I'm thinking about other things like what other drivers are doing, how the tires are sort of degrading, things like that. And you're trying to minimize the things you actually have to think about actively. So, and when you're driving, you're always on the limit. So you're always on the edge of going over it. So if you are too hyped up or you're too aggressive, or it's so easy to overstep that limit and either crash or hit somebody.
Liam, last time you were on the podcast, you were sat with us in Canada. Katie Osborne was here, my F1 Explains co-presenter. She couldn't be with us this weekend, but she has sent us this question for you.
Hello, Liam and Christian and everyone else there in the F1 Paddock Club. I'm so sorry that I can't be there with you, but I am here with a voice note instead. So, Liam, my question is, who's the first person you go and talk to when you get to the garage? Is it the team principal, maybe a race engineer, or someone completely different?
It's your race engineer normally. It's your race engineer and your performance engineering side of the garage, because you have multiple engineers. You don't just have one. You have a full team of guys just on your side of the garage, guys that are looking at all sorts of different things. So we have plans before the race. Like the drivers right now, they'll know exactly what plan they're going to be on. They'll have different scenarios. They'll have probably a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C for the race. But things that are changeable, like wind conditions or weather conditions, that can quite often change during the day. Normally we'll go and talk about those first. You go in the garage, check if anything's changed since the meeting, and then just run through the basics of what you're going to be doing in that race with your engineers.
I want to talk to you about the grid. When I watch at home, the grid looks mad. Like, it looks crazy. When I've then been on the grid on a few occasions, it's like, oh my Lord, it's even crazier than you think. There are so many people. There's music, particularly here in the Netherlands, where the music is pumping. What's that like as a driver when you're down there with a job to do? I find it hard to concentrate, and I'm going around talking to people. My job is not important, Liam. I'm just chatting away. Your job's really important, so it must. How is it to concentrate?
Well, of all the places, obviously this was where I experienced it first, and I felt like I was in a nightclub. It was insane. It's the music's so loud, and obviously you're trying to focus on what you're doing before the race. We have the national anthem, and then you have a couple of minutes to walk to your car, and those are the last couple of minutes you have to try and center in. But there's so many people around that, to be honest, it is quite overwhelming, I would say, especially when you're not used to it. But it's, again, something that you get used to, and I think something that is quite cool about Formula One.
Again, watching on the TV, you will very often see drivers with their helmets on, and you've got your head quite close to someone next to you, and they're having those last minute conversations. Who are those people, and what are you talking about in those like real minutes just before you sit in the car?
It's similar to walking in the garage. It's those last minute things that can potentially change. If it's weather conditions that are potentially changing, you're talking about that. It's anything like that, I would say. And it's with your engineers, obviously your trainer's with you as well, and so you're also talking to him about physically how you're feeling, what you can think about. For me, somebody I worked closely with for a long time and in my first races in F1 was a performance coach, a mental coach, and he's somebody that just having conversations with if you're stressed or you're nervous or you're overthinking certain things, he's somebody that you can talk to think about the right things, to focus on the right things.
That's a really interesting part of Formula One, and it's actually something we've done an entire episode on here on F1 Explains. If you're with us here in Paddock Club, just search F1 Explains, or if you're listening all over the world, scroll back on this feed, because we have an entire episode devoted to the mental side of Formula One, and with one of the people that helps the likes of Liam stay mentally sharp and focused and not overthink things. It's a really interesting one. And then Liam, the very final bit of race preparation must be pulling away from the grid box, going on your formation lap, and then pulling back into your grid slot to start the Grand Prix. We get little hints sometimes of what happens there, because we hear conversations on team radio between you and your race engineer. How much is there to think about during that sequence?
Honestly, a lot. Your lap to the grid, your warm-up lap, is about basically bringing the tyres in, making sure everything is at an optimal temperature. And we have targets for brakes, for tyres, for everything, to basically have an optimum temperature window for the start. So over that lap, you're in constant communication with your engineer about where everything's sitting at. We have also telemetry on the dash that I can look at basically to tell me exactly where the tires are at. And then even things like, your burnouts coming up to the grid, to do the start. Obviously, you see the cars do the burnouts. That's, again, to build tire temperature. And there's a target that we have for that. And believe it or not, there's a perfect amount of burnouts that you can do.
Oh, I believe
duration of burnout that you do, how long you do it for, things like that. to make sure that's optimum. And then you pull up, and it's normally for me, it's always quite nervous. You're waiting for the lights, and you're waiting for all the other cars to line up. If you're at the front of the grid, it's a really long time. And again, you're just trying to focus on your start procedure, making sure you're doing everything right. And normally it's as soon as the lights go out, at least in my experience, as soon as the lights go out, all your nervousness, everything that you're thinking about goes away. And it's like a switch, and you're basically just into like a race mode.
So fascinating insight. So much to remember. I'd need a post-it note on the side of the car to remember it all. I really would. Liam, it's been an absolute joy having you back on the podcast. Thank you for coming back. We really appreciate it. It's lovely of you to come back. Ladies and gentlemen of the Paddock Club, please give a warm round of applause to Mr. Liam Lawson.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. That is what Liam will be doing before he gets in the car this Sunday. You know, I guess other drivers have their own routines, but they all do like the baseline basic stuff. They eat the right things at the right time, talk to their engineers, warm up, stretch, do a little bit of yoga, stretch their neck, calm themselves down, and then get out there and race.
Yeah, love talking to Liam. Really, really interesting insight. A fantastic guy. And we wish him the very best of luck in returning to F1 this weekend, because big old weekend for him, isn't it?
I can't imagine what it's like. It's such a hurry and wait. It has to be so much anxiety every weekend, you know, just gearing up, potentially gearing up. And then, like, you actually have to go and race. I think it's amazing.
Absolutely. Thank you to Andy and Jess in the UK and Kathy in California for sending those questions. You can send yours to F1explains@F1.com. Producer Chris, I understand you have a Liam Lawson story for us.
I'm really excited. I want to let everybody know. He teed me up.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for producer Chris's Liam Lawson story.
This is about to be good now, I suppose. You might wonder where Formula One drivers stay during a race weekend. Sometimes they stay in motorhomes at the circuit. It's more usual for the flyaway races like this one here in Austin that they stay in hotels. Liam Lawson is staying in the same hotel as us. And I know that because I got into the lift on Wednesday morning. Who was in there but Liam Lawson? Now, I'm too shy to strike up conversation with an F1 driver. So I just said, morning, and stood there, went down the lift, all fine. But I was really excited that I'd seen an F1 driver because I'm a massive nerd. So the first thing I said to you, Christian, when I saw you at breakfast was, I saw Liam Lawson in the lift. Only then did I realise that Liam Lawson was in fact standing immediately behind me as I went, I've just seen Liam Lawson.
Did you have your F1 gear on?
No, this was before I had my uniform on. So he just presumably thought I was a massive fan.
You produced a podcast with him on. You were there when we did that interview, and yet you seemed to be more excited about the fact that you saw him in a lift than actually when we had him on the podcast.
I was excited when we had him on the podcast as well.
But more excited about seeing him in a lift.
It's like out of context, right? When you see someone out of place, it's like running into someone at the grocery store versus like knowing that you're going to meet up at a coffee shop.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'd like to know what Formula One drivers you've seen in a lift. F1 explains at F1.com. Have you ever been in a lift with a Formula One driver? And were you as excited as producer Chris?
I've also been in a lift with Jenson Button.
Okay, well, that's all we've got time for this week. Any other F1 drivers you've been in a lift with?
No. Liam and Jensen so far.
Did you get more out of your mouth than good morning to Jensen?
Yeah, I said I liked his shirt. He was wearing a really nice light green shirt. And I just said, nice shirt.
So you did like it? It wasn't just to like strike a conversation?
No, I really did like his shirt. And then he kind of said, thanks. And then there was an awkward pause. And then luckily the lift doors opened.
Well, if you'd like to know more about who producer Chris has seen in lifts around the world, if you do, F1explains@F1.com. Or you can send us a question about Formula One. That's the alternative use for the email address, like Andy and Jess in the UK did, and Kathy in California. And Katie, we are at the Circuit of the Americas all weekend. Now, if you happen to be here and are listening to this episode before the race and happen to be at the US Grand Prix, Katie, we've got information that might be useful, haven't we?
Oh, this is great. We are going to be doing a live show on Saturday evening after F1 qualifying. So Christian and I, along with a couple of guests, Ollie Bierman, Ferrari Academy driver, future Haas F1 driver, and our good friend, double F1 world champ Mika Häkkinen, will be on the amphitheater stage at 6:15 p.m. You're not going to want to miss any of the fun. And of course, seeing producer Chris, Christian and I in real life would be awesome to meet you as well.
If you're at the track this weekend, we'd love to see you right here at the live show. If you have a ticket for the Saturday or for the entire race weekend, you can just come and turn up. There's no extra cost. You don't need to book. There's plenty of room. Just turn up. If you're listening after and you're thinking, well, this is of no relevance to me, don't worry. We'll put the show on this very feed so you won't miss out.
And if you can't make it to Texas this weekend, like Christian might be saying, maybe you can make it to Washington, D.C. next weekend. You can hop on a flight and join us as we're going to be at the brand new F1 Arcade hosting a watch party for the Mexico City Grand Prix.
Yeah, F1 Arcade is an official F1 bar with racing simulators, big screens so you can watch the race, food and drink. I've been to the one in London. Kate, I loved it. It's brilliant. I've been a few times, actually. There's one in Birmingham in the UK as well. Katie, you've been to the one in Boston, right?
Oh, that was a treat. I had my dad and my mom there. My dad took a couple spins on the sim. It was good, literally and figuratively. But it was neat to share the experience with them.
Well, to find out more and to buy tickets for the Mexico City Grand Prix watch party at F1 Arcade, Washington, D.C., go to f1arcade.com/US. Then click on Watch Parties at the top of the page, and we'll put the link in the podcast episode description as well. Katie?
That's right.
Shall we say hello to some listeners?
I'd love to. Let's kick it off with Samyak from India, Noah from Iowa, Christian from Romania, Inno from the Philippines. Do you want to take over?
I'd love to take over to say hello to Sophia from Hungary, Lance from Virginia, Claire from London, and Eva from Slovakia. Just some of the people who have emailed us and said hello. F1 Explained to F1.com. Send us your questions. Let us know what you think of the podcast. Ask who producer Chris has seen in lifts.
I'd love to know if anyone actually has seen another one. That'll be great.
If anyone's seen producer Chris in a lift, that'd be exceptional, wouldn't it? Anyway, carry on.
Do check out the other official F1 podcast while you're at it. F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Nation. You can find them plus previous episodes of F1 Explains right there on your podcast app.
Both presented by Tom Clarkson, who I have also once been in a lift with.
And produced by producer Chris.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for listening. We hope to see you here at COTA if you are here this weekend or next weekend in Washington. If not, everything we get up to will be on this very feed. Make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss anything. For me and Katie here in Texas, bye for now.
Bye-bye.